This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. Just so you have it for your records, 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017 is our phone number. You can call, you can text, whatever. Some of y'all do both at the same time. I want to play you just a little bit of sound from J.D. Vance talking about his future vision, I suppose, for America, where diversity, equity, and inclusion is eliminated, and anyone or any policy that supports it will be discredited and defamed. So let me see. I know how to do this. Here we go. Let me push play.
The United States passed a law that said you're not allowed to discriminate against people based on the color of their skin. And the bureaucracy that was set up to enforce that law has forced private and public sector entities to discriminate against people based on the color of their skin.
So for J.D. Vance to fix that, Project 2025 would remove terms like diversity, equity, and inclusion from all federal rules, regulations, contracts, grants, and legislation, and SNAP, which feeds hungry people, and student loan forgiveness and increased monthly payments, and the program that requires federal contractors to comply with anti-discrimination laws so they could discriminate. Overhaul Minority Business Development Agency, meaning no more grants and loans to minority businesses of color. Overhaul public housing and forced work requirements. Enforce the death penalty more vigorously. Terminate any unnecessary consent decrees, meaning police agencies that have been found to disproportionately kill people of color.
Where do we fit into that as black people? It sounds like those are policy initiatives that are aimed squarely at us. I think it was on Wednesday I talked about the malfeasance that exists in government contracting at the state level and to a lesser degree at the city level. There is a certain percentage of contracting dollars that is required by state law to go to black-owned businesses, because the way the state looked at it in 1986 or 87 when this law was passed, there are African Americans in the state of Wisconsin that pay taxes. They pay property taxes. They buy things. They pay sales taxes. They work. They pay income taxes to the state of Wisconsin. And because the state of Wisconsin allows business owners to bid on contracts to provide goods and services to state government, there needs to be a minimal requirement of how much we spend as a state with black-owned businesses. It's a very, very small requirement, but it is in the law. It is a must. 5%, that's it, of the contracting dollars that the state of Wisconsin spends needs to go to black and or minority-owned businesses. That law is almost 40 years old, and not once ever has the state of Wisconsin met or exceeded that goal. That's a problem, because that is money that should be coming to our businesses, to our communities, to our entrepreneurs, et cetera, et cetera. And it is not. The federal government has a similar requirement, but the dollar amounts are much, much larger. In the event that the Trump-Vance administration is able to take root in the executive branch of government, all of those requirements for minorities to get their fair share of contracting dollars will be completely eliminated. And I just don't want anyone to operate under an illusion that the hatred of minorities coming from the Republicans and almost a universal chorus is just for the migrants. Because I hear us, some black people, echoing that same sentiment, talking about the border and talking about migrants. And this is the weirdest thing ever. We've had a problem with the border since the border was created. And if it's impacting black people, why are we just hearing about it now? Like, why are black people now? Like, we weren't saying anything about the border when Barack Obama was president. We weren't saying nothing about the border and people coming from across the border taking black jobs when Bill Clinton was president. This is entirely manufactured by the Trump campaign. And then our people are swallowing it up and thinking that it's really going to impact us. It is such a distraction because they want us thinking, yeah, Trump and Vance and the Republicans in the House and in the Senate. Yeah, they hate those border jumpers. They hate those migrants. And then they like we're able to like galvanize around that because, you know, black folks don't want anything or anyone that's a threat to our job security. At the same time, they're putting together policies that are going to come after us directly. You know what really got me is vigorously enforcing the death penalty. I'm not going to rehash that segment that I did, I don't know, probably a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago. The number of people, I got to get this right. The number of people that Donald Trump executed in his last, it was either his last 6 months of August or office rather, or from when he lost the election in November of 2020 until he left office January 20th, 2021. He executed more people that were on death row than all of the states combined in the 4 years in which he was president. And of the 13 people he executed, 8 or 9 of them were black. One of them, they had additional evidence where they thought that he was innocent. And then there was an African-American rapper or producer who I'd never heard of before, but apparently he was an early Trump supporter. And apparently Trump listened to this guy. It was nobody I had ever heard of. But I guess this guy called Donald Trump directly because whoever this African-American music mogul producer, it wasn't P. Diddy. I don't know who this guy was. His name was mentioned in an article, but I never heard of him before. But he was an early supporter of Donald Trump's. And apparently this African-American fella had Donald Trump's ear. And so this black producer that had Donald Trump's ear called Trump and said, hey, you need to give this guy clemency. You can't execute him. And everybody just assumed because Trump and this particular African-American man had a close relationship that Trump would listen to him because Trump did take his phone call. And Trump said, I can't because the family that was like the victim's family is already on their way to watch the execution. So I have to kill him. And that for some reason doesn't make the news. And so when you talk about the death penalty, and we have pretty much realized in this country that the government should not be taking life. The death penalty, while it's still on the books in a number of states, it's not really used. It's only used in really, really extreme cases. It's very rare. Clemency is given. And also the Supreme Court has found that the methods that we use to kill people on death row constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. If you've ever read a description of when a lethal injection goes wrong, all those people are tortured for an hour. They just let them just fester in their own pain. It's really, really horrible. And so that is why they have essentially been, it's like a moratorium. There's a federal moratorium on death penalties until Trump came into office. Like, we have to understand some of this stuff. And I don't want us to operate under any illusion that, oh, no, the Trump administration is just going to build a wall and then keep the migrants out. Okay, and maybe they do that, but then that keeps us in, and we're going to be targeted too. So if you're going to have your support for a Trump administration, just know what you are potentially sacrificing and the harms that will come. When they talk about the new work requirement, or I think eliminating SNAP, it'll be new work requirements for public housing. Who do you think that's going to hurt? Do you know that per capita, African-Americans have the highest homeless rate? We don't say homeless anymore. We say unhoused. We have the highest unhoused rate in the country, percentage wise. There's a few more Caucasians that are homeless only because there's like, what, 180, 190 million white people in this country. So obviously more of them are going to be homeless. But percentage wise, homelessness is an African-American problem. And we talked about this when the guy was killed right outside of the DNC, the unhoused fella that was fighting with another unhoused person. Like, that is a very real thing. Like, we disproportionately are impacted by homelessness. Well, the Supreme Court made a ruling that you can criminally punish homeless people for sleeping outside, even when all of the shelters are filled. Think about who that is going to harm disproportionately. Meaning, if there's someone who is unhoused, and they're like not bothering anybody. They're sleeping in the woods, not even near human beings, right? The police now can round them up and arrest them, give them criminal records for not having a house. And even if the shelters are full, they made it very, very clear in the article that I read about the Supreme Court's ruling, because this was brought up when someone was arguing against this rule, saying it's totally unfair to arrest and criminalize somebody because they don't have anywhere to live. And they brought up the exception. Well, what if all of the shelters are full? Doesn't matter if they're sleeping outside, that can be a criminal offense. And cities now have the ability and the authority and the latitude to do whatever they want with their homeless population, include and criminalize them and place them behind bars. So interaction, this is what the point I'm trying to make with this, and this is buried deep in the Project 2025 nonsense. What we saw those Ohio police officers do to that man will be happening more frequently in this country, because cities will be able to deploy their municipal cops to arrest, round up, harass, and badger unhoused people, the majority of whom percentage-wise in this country are African-American. Take a break. When I come back, let's talk about what Eric Hovde said. And Eric Hovde, you know, just full disclosure, has been on The Truth a number of times. He sat down with my colleagues on Juneteenth Day. Hovde was hovering when I was on air at Juneteenth. He ain't come sit down with me. Why not? I would have talked to Eric Hovde. How come Eric Hovde don't want to talk to Sherwin? I'm a nice guy to talk to. I do good interviews. He ain't want to talk to me. He was in the vicinity. You know what he was doing? He was waiting until I got up, until my shift was over broadcast from Juneteenth Day. And then he came and he sat down. He also admitted that he had only heard of Juneteenth Day 11 years ago. So FYI, Juneteenth Day has been around since June 19th, 1865. And Eric Hovde admitted on our airwaves, and he was like shocked by all the people. He's like, look at all the people that are here for this thing that I just heard about when I was in my late 40s for the first time. I am just flabbergasted. Look at all these people that are here. I have standards, and some of you do too. My preference is to vote for someone who has heard of Juneteenth Day, like in at least in the 20th century. Eric Hovde ain't heard. So in 2012, okay, when a black man was president, if you would have saw Eric Hovde probably practicing his Village People dancing, because, you know, he is the construction worker in the Village People. No shade. That's a nice job. Everybody loves the song YMCA. I bet if people played it right now, people would do the YMCA. But if you would have run into Eric Hovde wearing his full construction worker regalia in 2012, and you asked him about Juneteenth Day, he wouldn't have known what it was. Isn't that something? I'm going to take a break, come back, talk about what Eric Hovde said very recently in an article that I'm going to read from when I come back. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be back shortly.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
There's something that I don't understand, and maybe you guys, because you guys are a lot smarter than me. I'm only one brain. I mean, there's a lot in my brain. I mean, I got a lot of knowledge up there now. But there's, assuming there's, I don't know, how many people listen to the show? 10, 20 people? 20 people listen to the show between the podcasts and the YouTube and on the actual radios and the cars and on 1017thetruth.com. I'm a good 25, 13, 11 people listen to this show. That's a whole bunch more brains. I'm only just one brain. So sometimes when I can't figure something out, I like to defer to you all, because you can help me sort out something that's complicated for me, because I don't understand this. Eric Hovde, you know, the construction worker from the Village People, is accusing and has accused former President Barack Obama of stoking racial fears and inciting racial anxiety right about 6 months before every election just to get black people really, really super mad so that we black people vote for Democrats. This is what Eric Hovde actually said. If, let's say there's an officer involved shooting or a vigilante kills an unarmed white, black rather, man or child, and we get angry. And in the times that that happened during the Obama administration, because we saw a definite uptick in black men, black boys, and black women being killed by the police. You guys notice that? I think that was the beginning of the ultimate backlash that took place after Barack Obama left office and we got the rise of Donald Trump. So there was some undercurrent brewing amongst law enforcement that they were probably very unhappy, either obviously or subconsciously, that Barack Obama was president. And as we had those very, very tough conversations, because I was broadcasting through, I mean, Trayvon Martin, I was on air. Freddie Gray in Baltimore, we talked about that when I was on it. Tamir Rice, even here in Milwaukee County. Corey Stingley. Ferguson, Missouri. Mike Brown. That was a bad one. And so because we talked about it, and it angered us because it reminded us of what America really is. It hasn't traveled too far from its beginnings when it comes to how it looks at race and how it demeans certain people because of said race. But Eric Hovde believes, and I'm going to read his direct quote in a minute, that Barack Obama's, and even used like reconciliatory language. I remember in Ferguson, Obama's like, hey, can't we all just like talk to each other? And I was kind of angry because I wanted Barack Obama to see himself as Mike Brown. And eventually Barack Obama did have some scolding words, but you know, presidents have to be, they have to be uniters, even in times of tragedy. But when we witness an African-American who is unarmed, who gets killed by the police, we're not in the mood to talk. We're not in the mood to reconcile. We are angry because we feel that could be any of us at any point in time. And that anger is justified and it's expected. But Eric Hovde says, no, Barack Obama just used that to get votes. There's a difference. And maybe this is what I need help with when it comes to this understanding that I have. And maybe my understanding is limited and ignorant, and I'll clearly admit that. I don't ever see any kind of outrage, any protests, any riots, anything when a white person gets shot by the cops. Because you know that unarmed white people get killed by the police too. I posted a video on the Hughes Views in the Facebook group. So it's a handcuffed white guy in the backseat of a squad car. And he's obviously high. And then he's telling these cops, because he's on his way to jail, I'm assuming. He's in the backseat and he's handcuffed. He's telling these cops that he has like fentanyl, like on his person somewhere. He seemed like he was really worried about the fentanyl that he had. He wanted the police to get it away from him. Because I don't know if you guys know about fentanyl other than what you hear about in the migrants are bringing it over by the damn truckload from the border. A very, 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 very small amount will kill you dead. And when I say a small amount, the amount of fentanyl that can kill a human being can fit on the edge of a penny. That's not a lot. So it's extremely dangerous. So there's a white guy who was in the back of the squad car. And it's all on because they got cameras in the squad cars, you see. And there's audio. And this guy's like, hey, I got fentanyl on my leg or in my pocket. Can you get the fentanyl? Can you help me? I'm worried. He's going on and on. He's carrying on. Then the vehicle, the police cruiser where this guy was handcuffed in the backseat, it pulls over. It stops. And this cop starts beating. This is a white man now. Like mercilessly beating this man. He's throwing elbows, punching him in the head. And the guy's knocked unconscious, right? And so the guy's laying on the rear bench seat in the squad car, cuffed. Just got beat, looks like almost to death by this police officer. And then the cop slams the door closed to go back to the driver's seat to continue driving this guy to jail and slams his head in the door as he is, you know, trying to close the door so he can go back and drive the police cruiser to the police station. But this is what I don't get. White people don't say anything about that. If we knew the full scope of what police brutality looked like in this country, there would be policy changes. The reason why I don't think we got a George Floyd Justice in Policing bill passed is because America thinks that's just a black person problem. Because when white folks get killed by the police, they say nothing. Even if it's not justified, there. And am I wrong? Am I missing something? Because y'all got a whole bunch more brains. It's more brains listening to this show right now than it is brains talking. Do you ever see white people protest and gather at the Zeidler Municipal Park or march down the street or block the freeway to show any kind of outrage to a cop killing a white person? They don't. And I don't know why that is, because there are unjustified killings of white people, but I just don't know. Are they that destructive that they don't care? Are they just that much believers in the police authority that if the cop kills somebody, well, the person must have done something wrong to deserve it? Even in the cases where someone is mentally ill. Now, I know some of you will probably refer to the scenes that you can remember where there's a white guy, like it'll be a naked white guy chasing 10 cops with a sword and the cops let him go. And then we'll use that as justification. Like, oh, look, they let the white guy live. But if a black guy tried to do that, you know, they'd kill the black guy. I even looked up the data. And as I was looking up that data, because I did a show on it one day, I didn't like what I saw. So a couple of things. More white people are going to be killed by the police and are going to die in police custody than black people, first and foremost. That is an absolute fact. But then I looked at the number of African Americans that are killed by the police in any calendar year. I think it was like a 4 or 5 year statistical analysis of how many African Americans are killed by the police. And it varies pretty widely. But then I looked at another statistic, like what kills black people? Black children is what I was really focused on. Like, what kills black children more than the police do? Because the cops killed like teenagers and 12 and 13 year old black kids, too. And then I found something that was so disturbing, I decided I wasn't really going to talk about it. Because I'm thinking, oh, the police, like they have the monopoly on killing black children. Black parents in any calendar year will kill their children because of child abuse than the police will kill black children and black adults combined. And I was like, uh-oh, sometimes you find too much data. Because whenever I want to cast a negative dispersion on the oppressor, and I keep looking for more information, I look for more data, and I look for more facts. I need to be, like, it has to be unequivocal. I want to be able to prove the point with data. But then when I saw that, because that's going to force us to have a conversation, and I don't know if we're ready to have that. I think that we are much more comfortable talking about when white cops kill unarmed black children and black women and black men. We don't want to talk about some of the things that we do. However, I digress. Wisconsin's U.S. Senate election could help determine which party controls that body in November. Incumbent Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat, is locked in a nationally watched re-election battle with Republican Eric Hovde here in Wisconsin. Republican U.S. Senate candidate Eric Hovde this week accused former President Barack Obama of using police shootings involving black men to, quote, maximize anger over race ahead of elections. And here's what Eric Hovde said. This all started with Obama, Hovde said, as he accused Democrats of trying to divide the country over race. Imagine that. We're trying to divide the country over race. Hovde goes on to say Obama ran on hope and change and bringing us together. And then he used race as a tool and a weapon. And he would find 6 months before any election some incident between the police and typically a young black man. And then they would whip it up to create anger in the black community. Like, I don't know if you can get more overtly disrespectful and racist than that. So This is what Eric Hovde is saying about Barack Obama. And I'm just telling you this to inform those who are still on the fence about who they're going to vote for. If you're considering Eric Hovde because you've heard him on. Hell, Eric Hovde has been on 101.7 The Truth as many times, if not more, than Kamala Harris. And I interviewed her four times. Just for your own edification here. To say that we'll take the tragedy of an African-American, usually a black man, being killed by the police, and Obama intentionally using that to whip up anger to get votes. I think that tells you what kind of a U.S. senator he would be when this nation is faced with another unarmed black man being killed by the police. As I'm trying to like sort through all of this and try and figure out why people are exhibiting the political behavior that they do. And if I'm looking at what they are now being very overt in saying, the Trump Vance campaign about gutting DEI, and if I'm digging into some of their policy announcements, and they give Kamala Harris a lot of flack because she's not talking about her policies, even though she is. $25,000 to first time home buyers, continuing the forgiveness of student loans, even a credit for people that want to have children. Those are a bunch of policy pronouncements. Building more housing to drive the cost of housing down. When you have an overt supply of housing, then the cost of existing housing goes down. These are all policy positions that Kamala Harris has. The policy positions of the Trump Vance administration is to have more work requirements for housing, for subsidized housing, to eliminate SNAP benefits, to accelerate and increase the use of the death penalty, and to punish individuals who are unhoused and allowing local police to do whatever they will with people that have nowhere to sleep, and giving the police immunity. And then you have Eric Hovde essentially saying that black people and Democrats led by Barack Obama, we just use the murder of black men by the police as a way to get more votes. As a self-respecting African-American person, there's a bunch of you out there. Where do you find benefit in voting for such a party and such a ticket? Is it because Trump's a businessman? Is that, does that still hold water, even though Donald Trump is permanently banned from engaging in real estate in the state of New York because he has 34 felonies, because the businessman falsified his records to cover up the fact that he was paying a porn star? He had to falsify some records. He had to cook his own books. Is that the kind of businessman that we want to elect? Speaking of Donald Trump and paying women, just when you thought it was over, what if I told you that Donald Trump has been paying right now, what's today? August the 16th. There's two women he's paying right now. $180,000 each. Now, when I read it, and I'm going to share it with you in a second. So right now there's two women, and they're doing it in a shady way. Right. They're taking campaign money. And they're, I guess it's not shady anymore because it's all been exposed. And it's very illegal. Like, dude is still doing illegal stuff with all these pending court cases he has and all these felonies that he has. He's still doing literally the exact same thing right now to this day. Check this out. So he's got a campaign consultant. Brad Parscale is his name. And Trump pays him a lot of money. I don't know, $1 million a month or something like that, $2 million a month to do blah, 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 campaign related stuff. So Trump pays this fella to help Trump's campaign. I will say this about the Trump campaign. All of the people that are involved in it are getting rich, and donors are starting to complain because the money that should be used for outreach and for TV commercials, radio ads, all that other stuff, Trump is paying his people, which I guess I'm not mad at him, right? He's paying his people. If you're like around Trump, if you work for him, you're going to get rich. You're also going to end up destroying America, but you'll have a bunch of money in a destroyed America. So you'll be able to reign over her ashes, I suppose. So he did basically the same thing he did when he was paying the porn stars. He's literally doing it right now. He's got a guy that he pays for legitimate, well, I'm using air quotes, legitimate campaign work. And then this guy is now in charge of paying these two women. Wait until you find out who these two women are. Oh, you're going to love it. I had to read the article twice. I was like, ain't no way. Because if I find out that Trump is paying my woman, that means, because Trump pays to hump. You know what I mean? Like, that's what he does. Ain't nobody humping dude for free. Come on now. Not even Melania. Melania ain't giving Trump none. It's been a while, I think. Probably when Barron was conceived. You know, Melania, she don't say much no more.
Donald, I do not want to hump you. You embarrass me. You hump porn star. I not hump you.
Because that's how she talks. Her English is not so good. But when you find out who these two women are that Donald Trump is paying, and I'm just equating what Donald Trump pays a woman. He's paying these two women $180,000 a year each. That's a hump salary. It's probably a more official name for it, but that's what I'm assuming. So I'm going to take a break, come back. I'm going to tell you who these two women are that we just discovered that Donald Trump is currently paying with campaign funds. Literally doing what he did with Stormy Daniels, he's doing with these two women. I'm going to talk about that in a second. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
Welcome back. I love the song. Songs by an artist called Prophetic. We call him Prof. He's from Milwaukee. And he filmed this video like right by Rufus King High School on like 13th and Olive. There you go. So y'all want to know who Trump is paying. I hope he's not humping these ladies. But doesn't he have a history? We agree on that. He paid Karen McDougal. She wasn't talked about as much as Stormy Daniels. Stormy Daniels went on like a nationwide tour. She wrote a book. She got her fame out of it. Karen McDougal, I think she was embarrassed that the nation found out that Trump paid to hump her. Maybe we just need to legitimize sex work. I'll be honest with y'all, if I may. If a woman, how much did he pay Stormy Daniels? I think it was $130,000. Well, it's hush money to not say anything. But we don't know how much he paid her for the actual hump. If, maybe I don't want to say this. This might make me look bad. Because I'm not a prostitute. But if a woman that I found attractive said, Sherwin, and I said, yes. Yes, ma'am. I find you attractive. Like, oh, that's good, Sherwin. I find you attractive, too. I'm like, oh, we find each other attractive. And she said, Sherwin, can I pay you $130,000 to hump me? I would take the money. That doesn't make me bad, does it? Because y'all would do it, too. Y'all would do it for less. In certain circumstances, I think that that would be okay. And then, so she pays me the $130,000 for the best, I don't know, 3.5 minutes of her life. Okay. Think about how much that is per hour. If I get $130,000 for 3 minutes. And then she said, oh no, Sherwin, I'm running for president. I said, oh no. Sherwin, I'm going to give you another $130,000 to not say anything. I'm going to pay you some hush money. Please, it may ruin my chances of becoming president of people found out that I paid you to hump. I wouldn't say a word. I mean, I'd probably tell Dr. Ken. I mean, Dr. Ken, you ain't going to believe what happened yesterday. Oh, what happened, Sherwin? Tell me what happened. Oh, you humped somebody. Oh. So it's not. There's circumstances, though, right? It's just like if a lady, a very respectable lady, is dating a man. I know you guys are getting impatient with me not telling you who Donald Trump is currently paying. I'm going to tell you in a second, but hang on. Let me make this example for you real quick. If a woman, it's her right to do so. I don't shame women for what they're doing unless they're doing things that are shameful. But I shame men, too. So it is what it is. If a lady says, I'm not going to engage physically with this man until I know I like him, until I know that he'd be a good partner for me, whatever, whatever. And she may require this man to take her out on the town, take her out to dinner, take her out dancing, take her to the movies, take her to the Red Lobster, because, you know, people go to Red Lobster. I think all the Red Lobsters are closed, but you know what I mean? A woman can require a man have money because she needs to know that she's going to be well taken care of financially if she decides to settle down with this fella. And she makes this man spend a lot of money. He's got to take her out. He's got to buy her flowers and teddy bears. Do women like teddy bears? How old is too old to give a woman a teddy bear? Can I give a 51-year-old woman a teddy bear? I don't, whatever. So, right, a woman will say, hey, no, I want you to prove to me. And men, we do it. You know, if we like the woman, we'll spend many dollars. But then if he spends, because dating is expensive, let's say he spends $1,000. And then she finally decides, oh, yes, I think I could be with this guy. And then they engage in physical activities. That's kind of the same thing, even though it's executed differently. It's still, because what if you just said, okay, look, here's $1,000 right now. Save me all of the time and having to book reservations and having to order flour. Here's $1,000. Can we just, right? You're just getting right to the point instead of taking time. It's not, it's the same thing. Yes, no? Jason, do you, I don't know if we need your opinion, Jason. You might.
I don't know if y'all want my opinion on this.
I think it's reasonable. And a lot of y'all would do the exact same thing. You guys would. You probably have. All right, let me get the story for you. Oh, don't tell me I lost it. Oh, no, I can't find it. I did all that talking. Wait, hold on, hold on. I got to find it. Hold on. Hold on. Okay. I can't. Wait a minute. This is terrible. Help me. Oh, here it is. Here it is. I got it. Got it. Got it. Oh, I found it. Okay. President Donald Trump's campaign is secretly paying one of Trump's sons, wife, and the other's girlfriend $180,000 a year each through the campaign manager's private company, according to top Republicans. So this ain't even coming from, like, his ops. This is coming from other Republicans. Kimberly Guilfoyle, the girlfriend of oldest son Don Trump Jr., and Laura Trump, wife of middle son Eric Trump, are each receiving $15,000 a month from Trump. And that's according to two Republican sources who are informal White House advisors and who spoke on the condition of anonymity. Oh, wait a minute now. What if, here's the thing. So Donald Trump is paying his son's wife and then his other son's girlfriend $15,000 a month each. What if Don Jr. and Eric didn't know? What if they found out like the rest of us did in a Huffington Post article? What if Eric was like, yo, are you humping my wife, father? Shut up. I'm paying for it. It's rightfully mine. I'm just leasing it. I don't own it. You own it. You're married to her. Could you imagine? Because Donald Trump, when he pays women, you know what he pays them for. He's paying Eric's girlfriend and Laura Trump $15,000 a month. He got them on retainer. All right, I'm going to take a break and come back. I'm just breaking news all over the place. Donald Trump is paying his daughter-in-law and then the girlfriend of his other son $180,000 a year. And here's why it's suspicious. Because it's not like Trump is trying to hide it. So Trump gives money to one of his campaign consultants. The campaign consultant is the one that's paying those two women. One is married to his son. One is dating his other son. So he's trying to hide it. And the whole trial was about hush money. This literally is hush money. But now he's paying his son's wife and his son's girlfriend. I would be so mad. So I'm not married. But if I found out my daddy, Eugene Hughes, was paying my wife $15,000 a month and I had to find out about it in the media, That Thanksgiving would be very tough for all involved. Right now, I'm going to take a break. You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM, where we break all sorts of news. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
You guys remember Michael Cohen? Michael Cohen was Donald Trump's fixer. So I'm just going to give you a quick rundown of how this worked. Michael Cohen went to prison. And then Trump was also implicated in the hush money trial. And that's what he was found guilty of in New York. So when they talk about Donald Trump having his 34 felonies, this is what they're referring to. Okay. Trump humped Stephanie Clifford, Stormy Daniels, humped her. Trump needed to pay her and then give her some hush money because it would have looked bad, apparently, if Stephanie Clifford, who is an adult film actress, would have come out publicly and said, hey, Donald Trump cheated on his wife with me. He humped me. So what Trump did is he paid Michael Cohen $130,000. You know what they called that? They called it legal fees. Trump is paying Michael Cohen $130,000. Oh, no, Michael Cohen's my lawyer. These are legal fees. But what Michael Cohen did is he then paid Stormy Daniels. So on paper, it had an expenditure that Donald Trump spent $130,000 on legal fees, which is actually not an outrageous dollar amount, but that $130,000 was laundered through Michael Cohen's law practice, and then a check was cut to Stephanie Clifford so that Donald Trump wouldn't have to report that on his campaign finance reports, that he actually paid Stephanie Clifford. So he used another firm to do that. All of that stuff is illegal. Okay, so that's what got Donald Trump his 34 felonies, because they had to falsify a bunch of business records to explain where this money was going. And it was going to pay people that were doing things for Trump, including having sex with him. But Trump didn't want to reflect it on his campaign finance reports because some of the stuff that he paid people for was embarrassing. Trump got in trouble for that. He got 34 felonies. Okay, now I'm going to fast forward to what he is literally doing right now, which is. They don't learn, apparently. They don't learn. President Donald Trump's campaign is secretly paying one of Trump's son's wife and another one's girlfriend $180,000 a year, paying them $15,000 a month each through the campaign manager's private company, according to top Republicans. So just like Trump used Michael Cohen's law firm, he is now using Bradley Parscale's company to pay his son's girlfriend and wife $15,000 a month apiece. Kimberly Guilfoyle, am I saying that right? Guilfoyle, the girlfriend of the eldest son, Don Jr., and Laura Trump, the wife of middle son, Eric Trump, are each receiving $15,000 a month, according to two GOP sources who are informal White House advisors and who spoke on the condition of anonymity. They were unsure when the payments began, but say they are being made by campaign manager Bradley Parscale through his company rather than directly by the campaign or the party in order to avoid public reporting requirements. So he's trying to, because here's the thing, he could hire those women. He could hire his wife, his son's wife, and his other son's girlfriend to be campaign advisors. Totally legal and legitimate. And nobody would even really raise an eye, because if they're out like doing stuff for Trump, they're going to speaking engagements, or if they're acting as a surrogate for him, like those are legitimate campaign expenses because they'd have to travel. They got to stay in hotel rooms. Right. But the fact that he's hiding it, that just is sinister. And also because people went to prison and he got 34 felonies for him doing the blueprint of this exact same thing. They were unsure when the payments began, but say they are being made by the campaign manager through his company rather than being made directly by the campaign or the party. And that's in order to avoid public reporting requirements. I can pay them however I want to pay them, Parscale told the Huffington Post this morning, but then declined to comment any further. So what's happening is Trump is authorizing his campaign to pay Bradley Parscale, and then he, Bradley Parscale, is paying Trump's son's wife and girlfriend. Critics of the arrangement, including Republicans, said the setup was designed to get around Federal Election Commission rules that require campaigns, political parties, and other committees to disclose their spending in detail. Quote, a lot of people close to Donald Trump are getting rich off his campaign, said Paul Ryan, a campaign finance legal expert at the watchdog group Common Cause. They don't want donors to know that they're getting rich because at the end of the day, it's the donors' money that's getting people in Donald Trump's circle rich. Stuart Stevens, a top aide to 2012 GOP nominee Mitt Romney's campaign, was even more blunt. That's why Parscale has his job. He's a money launderer for Donald Trump. He is not a campaign manager at all. Laura Trump was a, quote, campaign surrogate, making appearances and conducting media interviews on behalf of her father-in-law in the 2016 campaign, and continues to participate in, quote, Women for Trump events as a 2020 campaign manager and senior advisor. In early 2017, Parscale confirmed that he had hired her to work for his company, which was in turn continuing to work for Trump's campaign. Gullifoyle, age 51, has been accompanying Donald Trump Jr. to campaign events since they began dating 2 years ago. She had been a Fox News personality until she left the network in 2018. In January of 2020, she was named chair of the Trump Victory, a joint finance committee used to solicit and distribute money to the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee. Here's what's crazy about this. Neither of these women have a current role with the campaign. They had roles in 2016. Laura Trump had a role in 2017. Kimberly Gullifoyle had a role in 2020, but they don't have any official roles with the 2024 campaign, but they're getting $15,000 a month that's being laundered through another firm. Now, I'm not saying this is hump money, nor am I saying it's hush money. I just find it a little suspect. And remember, the theme of today's show is we are connecting a bunch of dots. Trying to connect the dots on how Donald Trump's ear that should have been nearly shot off has healed perfectly without a scar. Connecting the dots of how Cavalier Johnson has had an outsized role with the Harris Walls campaign, and that Cavalier Johnson was invited to a prestigious White House state dinner where he sat between Bill and Hillary Clinton. We're just connecting a bunch of dots today, and we're going to continue to connect those dots in hour three. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.